I set everything up at the table and lifted the baby's favorite vibrating chair onto the bench seat between where we'd sit. Come inside. Dinner's on the table. Lily took her seat with Leilani still cradled in her arms. I reached to take her and she abruptly twisted her body so I couldn't touch the baby. What the hell, Lily? I was just going to put her in her seat so we can eat.
I can eat while I hold her.
I didn't say you weren't capable, but there's no reason you can't take a few minutes to have a meal in peace. We'll put her right here between us.
That chair is too bouncy. It's not safe. What if we hit a wave and it flips over?
My forehead wrinkled. A wave? We're docked, Lily, in the inlet, and it's flat as a lake outside today.
You don't care about us.
You know that's not true. I just want to be able to eat a meal with my wife for a few minutes. Is that asking too much? Lily looked down at the baby and ignored me. I sighed. How about if I hold the baby while you eat? I'll eat when you're done.
No, I got her. Go ahead and eat.
I felt the last few weeks coming to a boil. I lost my patience. Give me the baby, Lily.
No.
This is ridiculous. You're not the only one capable of taking care of her. She's both of ours, you know. Again, my wife ignored me. I threw the napkin on the table and stormed out toward the deck. Enjoy your meal with our daughter. Later that night, I felt bad for walking out and yelling at Lily. The baby was sleeping in the bassinet in our bedroom, and Lily was in the shower with the door open and the monitor on the sink, which was only 5 feet away. When she emerged from the steamy bathroom, I was sitting on the bed waiting to apologize. But two things snagged my attention first. The deep dark circles under Lily's eyes, and how thin she looked, wearing just a spaghetti strap nightgown. She had lost a hell of a lot more than baby weight. Shit. I took Lily's hand as she went to pass by. Come here. She glanced over at the bassinet and hesitated. The baby was sound asleep, so I gave her a little tug and guided her onto my lap. I'm sorry for yelling at you earlier. She shook her head and looked down.
It's fine.
No, it's not. I miss you, Lily, even though you're right here.
I'm taking care of the baby. What do you expect?
I sighed. I know, and I want to help more, but you won't let me.
I don't need the help.
It's not about you needing help. I believe you could do this all on your own if you had to, but you don't have to. I'm right here, and I want to help. I miss holding Leilani and spending time with her, and I miss you, too. You haven't kissed me in months. Every time I try to give you even a peck on the lips, you give me your cheek or your forehead. Lily's eyes started to fill, and she looked down, twisting her hands. I cupped her chin and gently guided her so our gazes met. I miss you, babe. You're right here, but you're a million miles away at the same time. I wish you'd talk to me. Tell me what's going on in your head. I'd been doing so well. It seemed like I might have been getting through to her, until I questioned what was going on in her head. That was it. I saw the fire ignite in her eyes. She jumped off my lap.
I'm not fucking crazy.
I didn't mean to imply you were.
Get out!
Lily, she pointed to the door and screamed louder.
Get out!
I stood and put up my hands, showing her my palms. Lily, stop. I didn't mean... Leilani let out a wail. Our yelling had startled her awake. Lily marched across the room to the bassinet and scooped our daughter into her arms. She immediately stopped crying. Yet Lily said,
Now look at what you've done.
She's fine, Lily. Look. She's falling back asleep already.
Leave, Grant. Just get out.
I looked my wife in the eyes, the girl I'd known since we were 14, and what I saw scared the shit out of me. No matter how deeply I searched, I couldn't find any sign of sense. She looked almost deranged. I'm not going anywhere without Leilani. Lily's eyes widened.
You're not taking her anywhere.
I raked a hand through my hair. It was pointless to try to talk to Lily when she was in this frame of mind, but the look in her eyes made my blood run cold. I wasn't leaving my daughter alone with her in this condition. Blowing out a ragged breath, I shook my head. I'm going next door to sleep in the guest berth. I'll talk to you in the morning when you calm down. I couldn't sleep. I tossed and turned half the night, hating what things had turned into between Lily and me. But even more than that, I was worried about my wife. Being a foster care kid, she'd bounced around a lot, so she didn't have too many friends. And since she'd aged out of the system and my mom was gone now, no one was going to keep an eye on her. No one except me. So it was up to me to push when I thought she needed help. The problem was, when anyone pushed Lily, she pulled away. Lately, it felt like my choices were to be her caretaker or her husband. Being both wasn't really possible. But things had deteriorated to a point where she was at risk and needed help more than she needed a husband. And taking care of her and the baby was more important than her being pissed off at me. Feeling the need to check on her, I climbed out of bed and went to our bedroom. The door was closed, and I tried to creak it open quietly so I wouldn't wake either of them. I just wanted to see that she was sleeping soundly. The lower level of the boat was a lot like a basement when things were shut tight, so I couldn't make out anything in the pitch dark, even once I'd managed to open the door wide enough to see inside. Everything was so still, and I couldn't hear either of them snoring or breathing. So I walked in and went to the bed for a closer look. There was a lump on the bed, though I couldn't be sure if it was the blanket or Lily. Leaning down closer, I still couldn't hear any signs of breathing. So I gently felt around, still expecting my hands to hit a warm body. But the only thing I found was a pile of cold covers. I froze. A shiver ran down my spine while my heart leaped to my throat. Rushing to the wall, I held my breath while I felt around for the light switch. A horrible dread washed over me when I found the bassinet was empty too.
Lily!
I yelled. Feeling desperate, I swung open the bathroom door and yanked at the closet doors, too. Of course, she wasn't hiding in either. I bolted out of the bedroom and up the stairs, yelling with every step,
Lily!
No answer. The kitchen and living room were empty. I banged on the upstairs bathroom door.
Lily!
No answer. My heart was beating so fast. An overwhelming, sickening feeling came over me, and for a second, I thought I might throw up all over the place. What the fuck? I ran to the cabin door leading to the deck and whipped it open. Thank God. I shut my eyes and let out a huge exhale. Lily was standing on the back deck at the railing, but she didn't turn around upon hearing the door open. It took me a few heartbeats to pull myself together enough to step outside. It was still dark, but I could see her arms in the cradling position they'd been in every time I'd looked at her for the last few weeks. They were safe, at least. I didn't want to startle her, so I whispered, Lily. When she didn't respond or turn around, I took a few steps toward her. It was then that I heard her crying.
Shit.
I put my hands on her shoulders. Don't cry, Lily. I'm right here. She started to sob harder, so I guided her to turn around so I could hold her in my arms. But when she did, I saw the blanket she had cradled in her arms was empty. A shiver ran from the top of my head down my spine and into my toes. Lily, where's Leilani? She started to cry harder. My voice rose. Lily, where the hell is she? I ran around the back deck and then returned to Lily. Grabbing both her arms, I shook her. Where the fuck is she, Lily? Where is she? Lily turned to look out at the water.
She's gone.
Chapter 29. Sometimes you chip and chip at a brick wall until you're exhausted and still make no progress bringing it down. And other times, you pull out one brick and the entire thing starts to crumble. Leilani was the brick that had kept Grant's wall standing. Everything seemed to have changed since sunrise this morning. It wasn't anything you could tell from the outside, but it was in the way Grant showed me himself. After he woke up, he'd driven me home and said he needed to run a few errands, but he'd asked me to pack an overnight bag and be ready when he came back in a few hours. To my surprise, he took me to his condo downtown. The building was a fancy high-rise overlooking the waterfront, with a doorman and security desk. The uniformed guard nodded as we walked in.
Both your deliveries came and the crew just left, Mr. Lexington.
Thanks, Fred. I waited until we were in the elevator to quiz Grant. You have a crew? Grant chuckled. He intertwined his fingers with mine.
You'll see.
He slipped a card into a slot on the elevator panel and pushed a button. PH. Penthouse? Well, aren't you fancy? You should have told me your lair was this nice. Maybe I wouldn't have been such a pain in the ass about coming here. Grant lifted a brow.
My lair?
I thought it sounded nicer than fuckpad. He pulled me to his side and kissed the top of my head.
I'm actually glad you refused to come here.
Oh, yeah? So why are we here now?
You'll see.
The elevator arrived on the 14th floor and opened directly into a huge foyer. A large, round marble table greeted us as we walked in. I looked around. The apartment was enormous. To the right was a sleek, modern stainless steel kitchen, and straight ahead, a few steps down, was a sunken living room with a full wall of floor-to-ceiling windows that overlooked the water. I walked straight to the glass to admire the view. Oh my God, this is gorgeous. I don't know why I was picturing some dark and seedy place. Oh wait, maybe I do. It's because of what you used this place for. Grant came up behind me and snaked his arms around my waist.
Used is the key word, past tense.
I turned in his arms and wrapped my arms around his neck. Are you saying you won't be using this beautiful apartment for any sexual activities anymore? That's sort of a shame.
Not at all. I plan to use it for lots of fucking, starting with you bending over and pressing your hands against the glass in just a little while. But the place is now a lot more exclusive.
Exclusive, huh? I teased. Higher end one-night stands? Grant rubbed his thumb over my lip and stared at it.
Just you, beautiful.
The tenderness in his voice made my heart flutter. Ever since our talk this morning, my emotions had been all over the place, and I started to feel myself getting a little choked up. Grant saw it in my face and smiled as he brushed his lips with mine.
Come on, let me show you around.
We walked down a long hall. Grant opened each door as we passed and pointed from the doorway, but didn't go inside.
Office. Guest bedroom. Bathroom.
But when we got to the last door on the left, he opened it and took my hand to lead me inside what was obviously the master bedroom. The room had the same big floor-to-ceiling windows, a beautiful fireplace to one side, and a king-size bed in the center. Like the rest of the apartment, it was pretty stark on decoration, but what was there was beautiful and high quality. Grant walked to the bed and sat down, pulling me onto his lap.
Mattress is brand new. It was delivered today.
Was something wrong with the old one? He looked into my eyes, and I felt the warmth of his gaze spread through my chest.
It had 7 years of things I can't take back on it.
And those bricks just keep falling. I cupped his cheek. That was really thoughtful.
Figured we could pick up some new bedding this afternoon before we christen it.
I smiled. You better be careful, Mr. Lexington. Buying a new bed, taking me shopping, a girl could get used to all this sweetness. Grant looked at me in a way he hadn't before. Something was different, and that something made my heart race. I had put off making a decision about the long term, hoping something would organically happen to make it for me. And I suddenly realized it had. I'd fallen for him.
Get used to it, sweetheart. It's what you deserve.
Falling, falling, falling so deep. I was basically a pile of mush inside, and my self-protection mechanism had me needing not to fall so far that I lost myself. So I changed gears and smirked. While we're picking up bedding, maybe we can pick up a few decorative things, too. The apartment is beautiful, but it's kind of sterile. It needs some warmth.
Whatever you want.
I kissed him one last time and dragged us from the bedroom. Feeling emotional and sitting on a big bed with this man was dangerous territory on so many fronts. As we walked into the living room, I noticed a tag on the couch. Is that a brand new couch, too? Grant nodded. You needed a new one? He shook his head slowly. Oh. My nose scrunched up at the thought of Grant screwing some woman on the couch. Did you also get new countertops in the kitchen and a new desk? I asked dryly. Grant shook his head.
No, smartass.
I got the feeling Grant didn't do much shopping. He looked completely awkward in a home goods store. Every time I asked if he liked something, he shrugged and nodded.
Sure, if you like it. So I picked up the most hideous comforter set I'd ever seen. It looked like someone had taken the ugliest floral pattern in the world and laid it on top of a check print. Not only was it loud and made me a little dizzy, but the material was almost scratchy. How about this one? Grant barely looked at it. Sure, if you like it. I shook my head. It's the ugliest thing I've ever seen. His brows furrowed. So why are you picking it out? I'm not. I just wanted to see your reaction. You aren't really being helpful. I don't know what you like. He smirked. You naked. Just pick something you like and we'll be soft on your back. And your hands and knees. That sounded good. Desire shot through me. Grant noticed the change in my face and leaned forward to whisper in my ear with a growl. Hurry, or I'll be dragging you from this place and fucking you on a bare mattress soon. Oh my. I attempted to ignore the growing need between my legs and moved on to a display toward the back of the store. It was simple, a navy blue and white striped spread by Nautica. I ran my hand along the fabric, luxurious and soft. I feel like this one fits you. It was the first time Grant gave me an actual answer. I like it. Simple. Maybe a few of those, too. He pointed to a display of throw pillows I hadn't noticed to my left. They were navy with burlap patches on the front and would go perfectly, continuing a bit of a nautical theme. Perfect. Look at you. You're a regular designer when you want to be. Grant looked over his shoulder and then to the left and right. I thought he was looking for other items to add to what we'd picked out, but I quickly realized he was seeing if the coast was clear. Before I could argue, he lifted me up and tossed me out of the bed. I landed on my back in the middle of the Nautica display. A wicked grin spread across his face as he nodded. It looks good together. Let's get it and get the hell out of here. I was probably as ready to go as he was, but I so enjoyed screwing with him. I lifted up on my elbows on the bed. But you said we could pick up some decorations. I figured we could check out the art store a few blocks away and then head over to that big lighting store on Fairway Boulevard. I can spend hours in that place. Grant's face dropped. I couldn't contain the smirk taking over my pout. He noticed and squinted. You're screwing with me. I smiled. I figured it was only fair since you plan to screw me. Grant scooped me up off the bed, cradling me in his arms. He shifted my weight to one arm and grabbed the striped comforter set off the shelf. He walked to the throw pillow display and dipped forward. Grab a few. I laughed, but grabbed two I liked. He marched down an aisle toward a register on the other side of the store. You're going to carry me to the line? I am. Keeps you from stopping to look at shit and gets us to trying out the new bedding faster. I giggled. A few people stared at the handsome man carrying a woman and his purchases, but either Grant didn't notice or didn't give a shit. You realize you look like a Neanderthal. That's the way you make me feel, sweetheart. Don't worry. I'll make up for my ungentlemanlike behavior when we get home. Home. He'll make it up to me when we get home. I liked the sound of that for a lot of reasons. Chapter 30. The next week was absolute bliss. Grant and I stayed holed up in his condo for a day and a half, spending Sunday christening every surface we could. Then Monday morning, he had to go to a meeting out of town, and a gigantic bouquet of flowers was delivered to the office. They took up half of my desk. Tuesday, he met the plumbing contractor at my house so I could work late. Wednesday, we ate lunch in his office and locked the door for a quickie. Thursday and Friday, we slept at my place. On Saturday morning, he went into the office while I waited at my apartment for Mia to come over. She'd come back from her honeymoon earlier in the week and officially moved into Christian's place, but she still had a ton of boxes at our apartment. We were going to take them over to Goodwill today after getting some lunch. I practically sprinted to her when she walked in. It was probably the longest I'd gone without seeing her since we were kids. Honey, I'm home! She yelled. We embraced for the longest time, and when I pulled back, I shook my head. Look at you! You're so tan and relaxed, and you look so married, I smiled.
I missed you. Kauai was amazing, but it would have been better if you were there too. You would have loved the helicopter ride. Christian lost his lunch in a barf bag during the tour. I laughed. I'm sure that would have gone over well with your new husband. I'm taking two pieces of luggage and Ireland with me. We need to go back. A couple's vacation. Maybe Maui next time. That sounds great. Last weekend, I asked Grant when the last time he went on vacation was, and he said 8 years ago. Really? Why? I shrugged. He's a workaholic, and he didn't have anyone in his life to force the issue, I guess. Mia went into the refrigerator, pulled out the orange juice, and looked at the container. Pulp? Is this mine from weeks ago and expired? You don't like pulp. Grant likes pulp. She smiled. So, I take it you two have been spending a lot of time together while I was gone, if you're stocking the fridge for him. I sat down at the kitchen table. Yeah, we have been. It's been pretty great, actually. The last time I saw you two together, at brunch the day after my wedding, I wasn't sure I'd come back to a happy couple, him not wanting kids and all. Mia took two glasses out of the cabinet and filled them with juice before going to where we kept the liquor and grabbing a bottle of vodka. She poured a shot into each glass and stuck her finger in to stir before sliding one across the table to me. You can suffer through pulp from me. I preferred no pulp, but I'd drink it if that was the only choice available. Though that wasn't the issue. I slid the glass back toward her. You drink both. I'll drive. Neither of us is driving. Christian dropped me off on his way to the gym. He's going to come back when he's done and load the boxes into his car. She smiled. He told me to enjoy my day with you, and he'd take care of the donations and go food shopping. I shook my head. I have no idea how you fooled that nice man into marrying you, but you done good, lady. Since neither of us had to drive, why not indulge? I lifted the glass of orange juice and held it up to clink with my friend. To good guys for a change. Mia downed half the glass and wiped her mouth with the back of her hand. So, give me all the dirt. How did things go after brunch? I take it you convinced him having children was not the end of the world? I frowned. Actually, I didn't. He hasn't changed his position. I'm not sure he ever will. And honestly, he has reasons for not wanting children that I understand. Well, mostly. So, what happens if you two get serious? You just give up your dream of having a family? I shook my head. I don't know. I'm not ready to make the decision to stop seeing him. But I'm also not ready to make the decision to not have a family. So I've decided to put off the decision, hoping something will happen organically. Mia's lips pressed together in a straight line. I see only three things that could happen organically. She held up her hand and counted them off, first with her pointer. One, you split up and there is no decision to make. She added her middle finger. Two, he changes his mind. She raised her ring finger. Three, you accept not having children. She shook her head. You just said you don't think he'll ever change his mind, so that leaves splitting up or you accepting a very different life than you want. I don't think banking on splitting up is a healthy way to be in a relationship, and the last choice is an awfully big concession. Are you sure you would want that life? My shoulders slumped. Mia was 100% right, but avoidance was the only way to stay happy, and it had been a long time since I wanted someone in my life so badly. I sighed. I know burying my head in the sand is probably only going to make things worse in the future, but I'm crazy about him, Mia. I don't want to give him up. Mia stared at me for a long time and then abruptly stood. January 1st. What about it? That's the day you make the decision. It gives you a few months to enjoy the man and give it thought. But January 1st, we'll sit down at this table and not get up until you've made a decision you can live with. I forced a smile. That's a good plan. Though in my heart, I knew it was stupid. Chances were 4 more months would only make me fall harder for Grant Lexington, especially the side of him he'd been showing me the last few weeks. But my head was pretty damn good at convincing my heart it was in control. So I went with the plan. Come on, no more talk about this subject, I told Mia. Let's go finish sorting your stuff so your hubby can drop the donations off. I want to throw some things in from my closet, too. Okay. What do you say we double date tonight? Have dinner at that new Italian place downtown? I'll text Grant. He's working today, but he planned to come over later. I'm sure he'd be up for it. I stood to get started, and Mia reached out and squeezed my arm. One more thing, and then no more talking on the subject, I promise. Okay. Take it slow. I know you care about him, but go slow. Don't give your heart so fully away that you won't be able to take it back. I nodded, except I was pretty sure I already had. I hadn't laughed so hard in a long time. Mia kept all of us amused with stories about the odd things that happened at her spa. Another woman came in and asked if her husband could watch her Brazilian wax. Aside from the fact that treatment rooms are small, we don't generally allow people to watch while we do procedures with someone's legs wide open on a table when they're naked. So I asked if he wanted to watch because he was interested in getting waxed himself and offered to do a sample strip on his back or leg. The woman, with a complete straight face, said he wanted to watch because he was a masochist and it gets him aroused to see her in pain. No thanks. I think I'll pass on helping you get your husband's rocks off today. Grant was definitely the most shocked of the group. Not only was he not used to Mia's dark humor, he had no idea what half the services she offered were for. The beauty of owning my own spa is that now I never have to see an ass that looks like a rainforest propped up on a waxing table again. Mia looked at Grant with a straight face and said, "Do you wax your balls or shave?" He looked like a deer caught in the headlights, which was amusing as hell since he rarely looked rattled. He actually started to answer her, and I had to let him off the hook. "She's teasing you." Mia and I laughed so hard, tears streamed down my face. The waiter came over to offer more wine, and everyone but Mia declined because the rest of us were driving. Grant had gotten stuck at the office late and met me at the restaurant, so we had two cars. One small glass of wine at the start of a two-hour dinner was my limit. "So," Mia picked up her glass and brought it to her lips. She looked across at Grant. "What would you think about going to Maui for the week between Christmas and New Year's? The four of us. I mean, not me and you. I'm a married woman now." Grant chuckled and looked at me. He reached for my hand under the table and squeezed it. "What do you think? A week in Hawaii?" My heart raced. Making long-term plans warmed my heart. Lord knew giving most of my exes a dry cleaning ticket to pick up 2 days later would have freaked them out. I smiled. "I'd love that." After we got up from the table, the four of us stood around talking out front for another half hour. I overheard Christian invite Grant to a baseball game, and Mia winked at me with a huge grin. We never got to do things together as couples, and it felt so good to enjoy time with them together. When it started to mist, it was time to finally go. I hugged Mia and Christian goodbye, and Grant walked me to my car.
"It's late. You want to just leave your car here, and we can swing back tomorrow and pick it up?"
"No, I'm fine. I'm actually going to stop back at my apartment and pick up some work I need to do in the morning. I meant to bring it, but I forgot it on the kitchen table. So I'll just meet you at the boat."
"You feel like having wine? I'm out, but I can stop and pick it up on the way."
I pushed up on my toes and planted a soft kiss on his lips. "That sounds great. I'll see you in a little while."
"Be careful driving. It's getting foggy, and the mist will make the road slick."
My aunt would love you. For all the years I lived with her, not an evening went by that she didn't warn me to drive carefully or tell me about the weather. Grant opened my car door and held onto the top before shutting it.
"Go, smartass. I don't want you to get caught in dense fog. It rolls in fast down by the marina sometimes."
After I stopped home and got back on the road, it actually was getting pretty foggy. I'd teased Grant for wanting me to be careful, but it was becoming harder and harder to see. The roads leading down to the marina were winding, and I put on my high beams to get a better look up ahead. But after a few seconds, the headlights of an oncoming car flashed, so I turned my low beams back on. After the car passed, I hit the high beams again, but again an upcoming car approached, so I had to flick them back down. I gripped the steering wheel a little harder during the moments the low beams were on and relaxed when I could switch again. The fourth time an oncoming car passed, I was relieved to be able to return to my brights. But when I did, I was met with two big eyes. Shit! A huge deer with giant antlers stood in the middle of the damn road. He'd seemed to come out of nowhere. Suddenly, there he was, only 100 feet in front of me. We stared at each other, frozen in shock, until I thankfully jerked the steering wheel to the right. Everything after that came in slow motion. I missed the deer, but the mist on the road made the blacktop slick, and I started to spin. I pulled the steering wheel in the other direction in an attempt to counter the motion, but it did no good. My car went off the road and into the dirt. I pushed all of my weight onto the brakes, and the car slid sideways down the side of the road. With no lights shining anymore in the direction I was going, I got confused as to whether I was still on the side of the road or had gone back onto the pavement. I held my breath as the car slowed. Headlights from the other direction illuminated the street. Thankfully, I wasn't on the road anymore. But there was a tree up ahead. I braced, and everything became eerily quiet. Until impact.
Chapter 31. I wasn't a worrier, or a nervous person in general, but I checked my watch for the 10th time in an hour and stood on the back deck of Leilani, watching the dock ramp for any sign of Ireland. Actually, the fog had settled in so thick I couldn't even see the entrance ramp to get on the dock anymore, or the parking lot. I'd called Ireland's cell 15 minutes ago and left a message, but I didn't want to distract her by sending a text. When another half hour went by with still no sign of her, I began to pace and called again, only to get her voicemail a second time. "Hey, it's me." I looked at my watch and blew out of breath. "I left you at 9 and it's 10:30 now. You didn't mention making any other stops except home. You should have been here almost an hour ago. Give me a call and let me know you're all right." I swiped end and hopped the back transom, deciding to go wait in the parking lot. The walk up the dock to the ramp was unnervingly quiet. Not a single person was around, and with the fog hanging so low, the anxious feeling in my gut turned into something more ominous. Where the fuck is she? She could have fallen asleep, but it hadn't sounded like she planned on spending any time at home. She'd said she was grabbing a pile of work from the table. I suppose she could have stopped at a store, but not too many were open at going on 11 o'clock. Eventually, I gave in and sent a text. I waited for the sent to change to delivered, but it never did. Restless, I jogged back to the boat, wrote a quick note for her to call me if she got here before I was back, and swiped my keys off the counter. Getting on the road, I navigated the path she would have taken from her house to mine. I wasn't sure what I was looking for, but I really hoped I didn't find it. The roads were pretty empty for a Saturday night. Apparently, all the smart people were staying indoors. The more I struggled to see the pavement, the more freaked out I got. But no news was good news. Best case scenario, she sat down to take off her shoes at home and fell asleep. Yeah, that's what probably happened. As I went farther with no sign of her car, I started to feel a little relieved. Until I rounded a corner and saw a shitload of lights flashing up ahead. My heart raced. I stepped on the gas even though I couldn't see more than 20 feet ahead of me. Something was definitely going on up there. Even through the fog, I could see there were more than a dozen lights flashing at different heights. Lights like when both the cops and the fire department respond to an accident. "It's not her. It's definitely not her," I started to talk to myself. "Be reasonable. She's probably stuck behind all of that. Some dumbass was speeding in the fog and crossed over the yellow line. Damn, there are a lot of rescue vehicles." Approaching the parade of lights, I slowed when I saw reflectors and what looked to be a safety wand waving up ahead. A cop stood in the road wearing rain gear, so I pulled up to speak to him. A fire truck blocked a better view of what was going on. He leaned over to speak as I rolled down my window. "Accident up ahead. Road's going to be closed for the next hour or two until we can get things cleaned up and a tow out here. My girlfriend was supposed to be at my house an hour ago and she's not answering her cell. Do you know what kind of cars were involved? Is anyone hurt?" The officer frowned. Only one car. Driver was just taken by ambulance to county hospital. It was a woman. What's your girlfriend's name? Ireland St. James. The officer stood and lifted a walkie-talkie to his mouth. This is Connors. You got a name on the woman they just put in the bus? My heart thumped, waiting for the answer. Eventually, a burst of static came through and then a voice. Victim was that lady from the news, Ireland Richardson. I felt sick. Is she okay? The cop leaned down and shined his light into my car. He was probably looking at a ghost because I felt all my color drain. His eyes darted over my face and he frowned again. Not supposed to give out any information on victims, but I don't want you getting into an accident doing 100 miles an hour with this fog. She was banged up, but talking. He nodded. I wouldn't think anything worse than stitches and maybe a broken bone or two. I blew out a deep breath. Thank you. Can I turn around here? The officer rapped his knuckles on the hood of my car. Sure thing. Be careful driving. Fog is dangerous. Sir, I told you 5 minutes ago that I'd let you go back as soon as the doctors are done examining her. A guy just walked in and went right back. The nurse at the registration desk shook her head. He works here. Please, take a seat and I'll call you as soon as you can go back. Whatever. I took a seat and rested my head in my hands with my elbows on my knees. Who did they call for Ireland in an emergency? Her father's in prison, mother was long gone, and her only aunt moved down to Florida. What if she needs surgery? Who would make that decision? I should have gotten Mia's cell phone number for emergencies. Maybe she was her designated contact. I lasted about 3 minutes sitting before I got up to pace again. I made sure to stay in the nurse's line of view so she wouldn't forget about me. When our eyes caught, she let out an exaggerated sigh and shook her head before looking away. I didn't give a shit if I pissed her off. I only cared that she didn't forget I was here. About a half hour after I'd walked in, another nurse opened the door. Family of Ireland, St. James? I walked to the door and the woman looked at me. You're a family member? I didn't even have to think about lying. Yes. And you're her... I thought they might have asked her marital status when she came in, and I didn't want to contradict her. Brother, I'm her brother. The nurse nodded and opened the door wide for me to come into the back. Right this way. She's in bed 4. The doctor's just finished examining her. I followed her to a corner of the large open room, and the nurse pulled the closed curtain open. Ms. St. James, your brother is here to see you. Ireland's face was confused for half a second, and then she smiled and nodded. She had a bandage on the side of her head and looked pale, but she was in one piece. I went to her side, took her hand, and leaned down to kiss her forehead. Jesus Christ, you scared the shit out of me. What happened? Does anything hurt? Are you okay? The nurse shut the curtain behind her. Yeah, I'm okay. She pointed to the bandage on her head. Just butterfly stitches on my head from where I hit something, I guess. She lifted her left arm and winced. They think I might have broken my ulna. I'm waiting for x-ray to come now. What the hell have they been doing all this time if you didn't even get any x-rays yet? Ireland smiled. A nurse came back a little while ago and told me I had a very anxious visitor waiting. I can see you must have been a joy to keep in the waiting room. They did some lab work and examined me. But I'm fine, really. I dragged a hand through my hair. Are you sure? County's not the greatest hospital. I can take you over to Memorial. I'm fine. They've been really great so far. What happened? She shook her head. I was driving, and the fog made it hard to see, so I was switching back and forth between my high and low beams, and the last time I flipped on the brights, I found a deer standing almost right in front of my car. I hit the brakes, but the ground was wet and slippery, and I lost control. Remember in driver's ed class when they told you to turn into a spin-out instead of away from it? Yeah. Well, I didn't do that. I just reacted and didn't even remember that until I got here. I brushed the hair from her face. You acted on instinct. It's normal. Ireland sighed. I think my car is totaled. Who cares about the car? I began to pat down her body. Is anything else hurt? She laughed. No, Dr. Lexington, I'm really fine.
A few minutes later, the nurse came back in. She looked at me. Can I ask you to step back into the waiting room for a few minutes? Are you taking her down to X-ray? The nurse shook her head. Not yet. The doctor's going to come back in and do another examination and would like to speak to your sister. My eyes narrowed. Why? What's wrong? The nurse frowned and looked over at Ireland. Nothing is wrong. It's just our policy to have visitors wait in the waiting room during an examination. Ireland smiled. I'll be fine, Grant. She looked at the nurse. Can he come back in after the doctor is done? The nurse nodded. Sure. I leaned down and kissed Ireland's forehead. I'll be back soon. Then, begrudgingly, I went back to the waiting room. Sitting down, I leaned back in the chair and scrubbed my hands over my face. Why didn't I insist that she not drive from the damn restaurant? This was all my fault. I don't know what I would have done if anything had happened to her. My insides twisted at that thought. Ireland didn't know what she meant to me. Hell, I'm not sure I even knew before tonight. But now that she was okay, I was going to make damn sure to show her from now on. I knew all too well that sometimes life changes in the blink of an eye.
Chapter 32. Dr. Rupert, the emergency room doctor treating me, looked like Penn from the magician duo Penn and Teller. At least I thought it was Penn. I could never remember which was which. In any case, Dr. Rupert bore an uncanny resemblance to the shorter, older one. Since I was pretty sure he was in his late 70s, I figured it wouldn't insult him to mention it. Has anyone ever told you that you look like someone famous? He smiled, reached into his lab coat sleeve, and pulled out a bouquet of plastic flowers. Does this answer your question? I laughed. I guess so. He tucked the flowers headfirst into his lab coat pocket. No relation, but patients are disappointed when I tell them that. So I find it's at least a consolation prize to perform a trick. Dr. Rupert picked up the chart hanging from the foot of my bed and flipped through some pages. As he started to speak, the closed curtain opened and another doctor came in, drawing the curtain behind him. Good timing. This is Dr. Torres. He's an orthopedic specialist. Hello, I said. Normally, we don't call in ortho for a consultation until after X-rays, but I wanted to have him examine you now so we can give you all of your options. Okay. Dr. Rupert pulled up a chair and sat down next to me. He had an old-school way about him that doctors didn't have much anymore. Reaching out, he touched my arm. The reason we wanted to do an ortho consult before the X-ray is because we found something in your blood work. I sat up in bed. Oh, God. The first thing that came to my mind was cancer. Some blood cell count must have been elevated, and now they don't want to radiate me unnecessarily. My heart started to palpitate. What? What's wrong with my blood work? Dr. Rupert squeezed my hand and smiled. Nothing. You're pregnant, Ms. St. James. I blinked a few times. What? He nodded. I had a feeling the news might come as a shock to you. I noticed on the intake sheet that you said your last period was a month ago, and you answered the "Is there any possibility you might be pregnant?" question no. I can't be. Are you sure? He nodded. A blood test can pick up HCG as early as 6 to 8 days after ovulation. Urine tests generally can take a bit longer. Panic set in. I can't be. It has to be wrong. Dr. Rupert's smile fell. Are you saying it's not physically possible for you to be pregnant? There are rare cases of false positives in blood work, such as when you're taking certain medication for seizures. His brows drew together. Are you on any medications? I didn't see any listed. I shook my head rapidly. So it is physically possible you are pregnant? Meaning you've been with a man in the last month or so? I lifted my hand to my throat, which suddenly felt tighter. Yes, but we used protection, and I'm on the pill. Did you miss any of your pills? No, definitely not. And I take them at the same time every day. Were you on any antibiotics or sick at any time? I shook my head. Dr. Rupert sighed.
Well, it is only 99.7% effective, even under the best of circumstances.
But we used a condom, too.
Well, that obviously makes the odds even smaller that a pregnancy would occur. Sometimes there are just stubborn swimmers.
Dr. Rupert patted my arm.
Would you like us to give you a minute before discussing the x-rays?
I wanted him to rewind time and start over by saying I wasn't pregnant. How could I be? Grant was going to... Oh my God. I couldn't even begin to imagine what Grant would say. Without realizing it, I must have started to hyperventilate.
Miss St. James, breathe slowly. Take some long, deep breaths.
Dr. Rupert turned to the orthopedist that I had forgotten was even in the room.
Jordan, grab us a paper bag, will you?
A minute later, the nurse came in and asked me to breathe into a paper bag while three people stood around. She held my wrist and took my pulse until she was happy with the results.
You can stop now. Just keep taking big, deep breaths.
I rubbed my forehead.
God, I'm so embarrassed. I've never had to do that before.
The nurse smiled.
I have three kids under four. If my head isn't in a brown paper bag once a week, I'm hiding in the closet to sneak a glass of wine.
After I calmed down a little more, the nurse left, and Dr. Rupert asked if the orthopedist could take a look at my arm. Anytime it moved at all, it hurt. But suddenly, I was too numb to even feel the pain. When he finished assessing, he spoke to both Dr. Rupert and me.
I do recommend having an x-ray. Your ulna is most likely fractured. Bruising is starting to form on your wrist already, so we need to see if the bones are aligned or might need surgical repair or a reduction.
I heard every word he said, but none of them seemed to sink in. They went on to give me the pros and cons of having x-rays while pregnant, and then Dr. Rupert looked at me for a response.
I'm sorry, I shook my head.
You said it's safe?
We'll cover your abdomen with a lead apron and take the minimal amount as a precaution. Your reproductive organs won't be exposed to radiation. In cases like yours, where the risk of harm to your unborn child is very small, and the benefit of the diagnostic x-ray outweighs that risk, yes, I recommend it.
He smiled cautiously.
If your ulna needs to be reset and isn't, you could lose mobility in that arm, which we don't want.
I blew out a giant rush of air and nodded.
Okay. I'm going to admit you overnight, just as a precaution for observation. Would you like for the nurse to call someone for you?
I thought about maybe calling Mia, but it was so late, and I needed to let everything sink in myself before I could actually say the words out loud.
No, that's fine, thank you.
Dr. Rupert left with the orthopedic doctor, promising to return as soon as the x-ray results came in. I was glad I got a few minutes alone before the nurse came back.
Would you like me to bring your brother back in? The registration desk said he's asked about you twice and he's pacing. She smiled. You have a protective big brother.
I closed my eyes. The thought of seeing Grant now made me literally sick. But if he wasn't allowed back here to visit me, he'd undoubtedly make a commotion and suspect something was wrong. There was no way I wanted to have the conversation with him tonight in the ER. I nodded at the nurse.
Could you bring him back in 5 minutes? I just need a few more alone.
Sure, of course. Let's make it 10.
Not long after, Grant opened the curtain with concern etched in his face.
Is everything all right? That took almost an hour.
I cleared my throat, but had a hard time looking him in the eyes.
Yeah, everything is fine.
Did you go for x-rays?
No, not yet.
He put his hands on his hips.
Let me move you over to Memorial. I have an old friend on staff there.
No, it's fine. They said it wouldn't be too much longer.
It was impossible to hide my inner freakout. I managed to get through telling Grant about the orthopedic doc's assessment of aligned versus non-aligned without mentioning the reason he was called in before the x-rays. I also told him I was being admitted for observation. But after that, I was very quiet.
Are you sure you're okay? Does anything else hurt?
His concern made me feel even worse about lying.
I'm fine, just tired.
10 minutes later, the nurse came in. Before I could say a word, Grant stood.
Can you examine her again? She doesn't seem like herself suddenly. I'd like a doctor to check her out again.
The nurse looked to me, and I suddenly panicked she might say something about my pregnancy. I hadn't specifically told them not to, though obviously there were privacy laws. Seeing me pale and wide-eyed, the nurse caught on.
I don't think that's necessary. This is perfectly normal. There's an adrenaline surge and then a sudden drop after a trauma. I'd be worried if Ms. St. James wasn't getting groggy.
Grant nodded, seeming to accept the explanation. Thank God.
I'm going to take her down to X-ray now. We'll probably be a while. Since she's being admitted, you can go home, and I'll bring your sister a phone after the treatment for her arm is decided.
I turned to Grant. One look at his face, and I knew there was no chance he was leaving. He folded his arms across his chest.
I'm staying right here.
The nurse looked to me, and I nodded. It's fine if he stays. She disappeared a moment and came back with a wheelchair. She and Grant stood at my sides to make sure I could get up, even though I'd said I was fine.
We'll be back in a while, she said to Grant. Make yourself comfortable.
The nurse stopped at the nursing station and lowered her voice to speak to another nurse. I'm waiting for X-ray to call down to say they're ready for Ms. St. James. Can you page me when they do? Once the double doors of the emergency room closed behind us and we were out of Grant's earshot, she spoke while she pushed my chair.
I sensed that maybe you needed a few minutes without your brother around. I know what you learned was a shock, so I figured you might want to talk about it. Sometimes it's easier to talk to a stranger than a family member. But if you don't, that's fine too. I'm just going to give you a free ride around the halls until they page me and tell me X-ray can take you.
I sighed. Thank you. As promised, she was quiet and left it up to me to decide if I wanted to talk. After a few minutes, I did. He's not my brother. He said that because he was worried they wouldn't let him in since he's not a family member. He's my boyfriend. I looked up and over my shoulder, and the nurse smiled and nodded.
Well, now I'm really glad I didn't ask if your brother was single for my sister. He's very handsome.
I laughed, and my shoulders relaxed for the first time in an hour. We turned left down a new hallway that was empty.
I take it the pregnancy is going to be a shock for him, too.
He doesn't want kids.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, my husband wanted one or two. He wasn't happy when I told him I was pregnant the third time, but I reminded him I was the one who had to carry a 9-pound bowling ball while it felt like my uterus was going to fall out, and I was the one who was going to get sick for months and get up with the little monster after the delivery. Men sometimes forget that they have a hand in getting pregnant, too. You play, you pay.
I knew that was true. Clearly, I didn't get pregnant alone, but this was different. Grant had emotional scars. His reasoning wasn't exactly the same as a man who didn't want another mouth to feed or diaper to change. He has some very good reasons for not wanting a family. I shook my head. It wasn't my place to share the details of Grant's personal life. He has reasons.
Let's forget your boyfriend for a minute. How would you feel right now if the man by your side wanted a family? Would you feel differently?
I didn't even have to think about that. Yes, I definitely would. Don't get me wrong, I'd still be in shock. But I want a family someday. I didn't think that would be 9 months from now. But if the man I loved wanted children, I'd be okay with it, I think. We passed another nursing station, and the nurse pushing me said hello to a few people. She waited until we'd passed before resuming our conversation.
So your only real concern here is how your boyfriend is going to take the news.
I thought about it.
Yes, I think so. Do you love him?
I took a deep breath in and exhaled. It probably should have taken me longer to answer that question, but love wasn't something that needed to be analyzed. You either did or you didn't. I nodded.
I do. Does he love you?
I thought back to the worry on his face in the emergency room. He'd seemed truly terrified that I might be hurt. The way he'd looked at me lately had changed, too. I'd find him watching me with a smile when he didn't think I was paying attention, and the other morning I woke to him watching me sleep. Neither of us have said the words, but I think he does.
Obviously, under the law, you have choices, but it sounds like you want a family and you love the baby's father.
I know I'm oversimplifying things, but it seems to me like there's only one choice in this matter, and it's your boyfriend's. Whether or not he wants to be with you and your baby more than he wants to be alone. I stared out the window from my uncomfortable hospital bed, watching the sun come up. I'd barely slept last night. The x-ray showed I had a clean fracture, which meant no resetting of bones or surgery, and they'd come to cast my arm shortly after midnight. Grant had stayed by my side until I practically pushed him out the door. If he'd had his way, he would have slept in the chair and stayed all night. But with so much to think about, I couldn't quiet my mind enough to fall asleep even after he was gone. I dozed off and on, mostly. Mia was an early riser, so I thought about calling her. But it didn't feel right to tell her about the pregnancy before I'd told Grant, even though she was my best friend. Grant knocked on my hospital room door at 7 a.m. He had 2 cups of coffee and was dressed casually. He set the coffee down on the portable food tray and leaned down to kiss my forehead.
Morning. How's my girl?
My heart squeezed, and I had to force a smile. Good. Tired.
Did you sleep at all?
Not much.
That's understandable. Between the accident and being in this place, then the cast. You'll get some sleep when we get you home.
The day nurse came by a little while ago and said it would probably be a few hours before my discharge was ready. Grant took one of the coffees, peeled back the tab to open it, and handed it to me. Without thinking, I brought it to my lips and almost drank. But caffeine. I shouldn't have that. Setting the coffee back on the tray, I said, I think I'm going to skip coffee this morning. I don't want the caffeine keeping me awake later. Great. Now I'm a liar and an information withholder.
Good idea. I picked up some plastic cast shields in the pharmacy downstairs. Doc said you shouldn't get it wet, and I figured you'd want to take a shower when you got home. Maybe a nice hot bath.
Thank you. That does sound good. Though, oh my God, could I even take a bath? I honestly knew nothing about pregnancies or babies, and the thought of doing this alone made me feel like I might break out in hives. I scratched my face.
I spoke to my sister on the ride over and mentioned what happened. She said no problem covering you for however long you need.
I forced a smile. That's sweet. But I definitely will be back at work tomorrow. It's just a broken bone and a small cut.
And a pregnancy.
Grant frowned.
You should take it easy. You were banged up pretty good. You're going to be achy if you're not already. They need to give you muscle relaxers or something for pain.
Yet another thing I can't do. So I simply nodded. For the next few hours, Grant sat by my side. I was definitely quieter than usual. And he asked me on more than one occasion if I was in any pain and if everything was okay. I explained my mental absence as exhaustion, which at least wasn't fully a lie. After I was discharged, they made me sit in a wheelchair while Grant pulled the car around out front to pick me up. He got out and helped me into the car, even though I told him I was fine. I got the feeling nothing I could say was going to convince him to stop mollycoddling me. Well, there was one thing that would probably make him run far the hell away. We drove to my apartment, and I took a shower and went to lie down. Grant drew the blinds and turned off all the lights, so it was practically pitch dark in my bedroom. He stripped down to his underwear and wrapped himself around my body, spooning me from behind. The room was so quiet, and I thought the intimate moment might be the perfect time to tell him, but I truly was exhausted. It was a conversation I knew I'd need energy for. So I pushed it off yet again, vowing to tell him when I woke up later. While I was lost in thought, apparently Grant was too. He kissed my shoulder and whispered,
I don't know what I would have done if something had happened to you. I realized last night, I can't imagine my life without you anymore.
For some reason, that made me so sad. My eyes welled with tears, and they started to spill over. But I couldn't explain anything to him while I was crying, so I cried in silence and let him think I'd fallen asleep.
Chapter 33. I was in the kitchen cooking when she woke up. Ireland had fallen asleep with wet hair, and it had dried with the side she'd slept on pressed flat to her face and the other side all curly and wild. It was a mess,
Yet to me, she'd never looked more beautiful. I was so relieved she was okay. I turned down the flame on the stove and wiped my hands on a dish towel. That was a good nap. She walked over and peeked at what was cooking on the stove. What are you making? It smells so good. I lifted the lid off a pan. Chicken piccata. It looks delicious, too. I didn't even realize I had the ingredients to make that.